What the late history? What the late history? What the history is late? Woo, yeah, it's late.
It's late. It's very, very late. Da, 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 da.
Woo! Cha, cha, cha.
Gotta have a cha, cha, cha.
Absolutely.
Everything needs a cha, cha, cha on the end.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
We finally got to record this.
Hooray! Yay!
Yeah, I don't really have much to add beyond that. I think we should...
Welcome to our show.
Mm-hmm. And I think we should actually officially start it now.
I think we should.
What the...
History.
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 Hello and welcome to the What the History podcast, your fortnightly bits of bizarre history to make you say, what the history? I am one of your What the Historians, Trevor Holland, and I am joined by my awesome co-host.
I thought you were going to put wife on the end of that. That's why I was waiting. Sorry. Yes, hi, I'm Susie here.
Ooh. I think that would have worked it out by now, but anyway.
Oh, I don't know.
if this is your first What the History, welcome to a sillier start. And yes, we're married. It's all good. We both love history. So,
yes.
We
love each other and we love history.
Aww. Aww. So, speaking of history.
History.
What shall we discuss this time around?
Alrighty, I'll go first, like, as well as usual. But one day you can go first, Trevor, and really mess things up. The planets will be out of alignment after that. All sorts of things will happen, you know.
It'll be your own, what the history.
Earthquakes. Heaven forbid. Okay, right, you're looking at me like, for God's sake, talk, woman, talk. Okay, I will oblige you and everyone else here by talking. Something I love to do. People in New York City in August 1835 were lapping up a news story published in the New York Sun, a penny newspaper, which had the usual tabloid fodder of fires and scandals of the day for its immigrant and working class readership. For contained in the Sun's pages was the most fantastic articles authored by Richard Adams Locke, a Cambridge-educated Sun reporter, and the readership lapped it up in droves, with demand for the paper skyrocketing. For on the 25th of August, the readers got the first dose of a six-piece article series, and the question of, if we were alone in the universe, got the answer back of, no, we aren't. The article centred on reprints from the Edinburgh Journal of Science and was supposedly written by a Dr. Andrew Grant, a colleague of the famous British astronomer Sir John Herschel and former student of his father, Sir William Herschel, and excitedly wrote that Sir John had set up a 7-ton, 24-feet diameter telescope to the Cape of Good Hope after bringing the gigantic telescope from England to Africa. Regarding the power of this telescope, I quote, however, its true power lay in the fact that it contained a special second lens, the hydro-oxygen microscope, and that's in inverted air commas there, that further magnified, illuminated, and projected the telescopic image onto a canvas screen. It was the second lens that gave the instrument its power. It did so by solving the problem of distant objects losing their light and becoming dimmer when magnified, a problem that had long plagued astronomers. By adding illumination to the telescopic image, the hydro-oxygen microscope supposedly allowed the magnification of even the most distant objects with absolute clarity. End quote. What Sir John discovered while setting his sights on the moon was written down enthusiastically by Dr. Grant as 4-foot man-bats, named Vespertilio Homo, beavers that walked like humans who lived in huts, who had mastered fire and carried their young in their furry arms, unicorns, lush vegetation, animals similar to bison, and blue-tinged goat creatures. Dr. Grant wrote of various plant life, a temple built of polished sapphire and another species of man-bats. The public loved it. Scientists from Yale University visited to search for the original journal articles at the printing and editorial offices. However, they returned to the university empty-handed. Missionaries wondered how to get Bibles to the man-bats, and word spread about this fantastic story. It only came to an end when there was a fire caused by the gigantic telescope. It was translated into several languages and reprinted by books and papers as gospel. It was the most wondrous discovery ever. Except it was one of the biggest hoaxes in history. The hoax was admitted, and some sources say that the Sun's rival, the Herald, dug a little deeper and exposed the hoax. The Edinburgh Journal of Science had been out of circulation since before the hoax, but the public didn't know that. There was no such colleague of Dr. John named Dr. Andrew Grant, and while Sir John did go to the Cape of Good Hope with a telescope, it was nowhere near as big as the one previously described, and definitely, sadly, no man-bats, temples or moon flora and fauna. Sir John at first took the hoax in his stride, causing him to quip, and I quote, "It's too bad my real discoveries here won't be that exciting," end quote, and then got a little bit more bothered by the experience, and again I quote, "I have been pestered from all quarters with that ridiculous hoax about the moon, in English, French, Italian, and German," end quote. Edgar Allan Poe even got in on it, reporting that the Sun had stolen his story after writing a story for the Southern Literary Messenger, which was published in June 1835 about a man who built a balloon that carried him to the moon, a story which Poe's advised was based on truth. It failed to get much mention from the public due to the Messenger's lack of readership. Poe then changed his story and said it was a hoax as well. The alleged author of the articles, Richard Adams Locke, hasn't admitted that he was the author either. The Great Moon Hoax of 1835, as it came to be known, didn't do the sales harm in the long run of the paper. It was one of the first major hoaxes from that media to the public, and a fascinating look into this phenomenon, one that was repeated with Orson Welles' War of the Worlds radio show 103 years later. It's believed that the public in 1835 was more intrigued than upset that they had been fooled, and therefore, welcome to the pages of What the History, the Great Moon Hoax of 1835. Yay!
It's such a great story.
I love the man bats.
Mm.
4 foot tall man bats. Yep, good on you, mate.
A bit batty, really.
A bit batty. I just like how they were really, the public was more intrigued.
Yeah, absolutely.
Than gone, oh, we've been really fooled here, but geez, what an interesting story.
Yeah, well, I suppose fake news was more of a novelty back then.
Yes, sure was.
Mm-mm.
Is this your attempt at a segue?
No, this is just me trying to stop myself getting more political.
Okay, anyway. Well, don't get political. No, we're not getting political with these stories ones.
We'll leave the politics to the leaders of various countries and city-states. That's about as good as a segue as we're going to get.
City-states.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yes.
Why are you rubbing your chin there? You don't have a beard.
Well, not yet, but I haven't shaved
this week. It's like, now I'm doing it. Stop it.
So anyway, let's go back to, say, something about city-states.
Yes, let's go back to city-states.
Yes.
Where are we going this time?
Well, let me guide the way.
Yes!
Wow, that was a very long-winded segue. So many historical texts focus on the big, the loud, and the brash, that often the more subtle, yet just as amazing facts can be lost in the background. Often we know more about the battles than we do about the oftentimes more important, yet less spectacular stuff that happens once the dust has settled. A perfect example of this is the famous and often violent rivalry between the city-states of Athens and Sparta. These two rivals clashed on the battlefield at Tanagra in 457 BCE. I will quickly say apologies for any pronunciations that are terribly, terribly bad in the story.
It's okay. I'll try to help you, honey.
Thank you. Now, as we're saying, in 457 BCE, concerned by the increasing military aggression of the Athenians against the people of Thebes, Nicomedes led an army of Spartans and their allies in what was intended to be a demonstration of power to discourage the Athenian threat. Over 25,000 soldiers clashed, with the Spartans ultimately claiming victory, albeit with the help of mounted troops from Thessaly, who decided early in proceedings that they didn't really want to be fighting on Athens' side when things started heating up. While Athens still had a very strong force on the field, they decided to retreat to allow the unfortunate soldiers who had been pushed back by the Spartans to escape. So I guess that was that then. Oh, hang on, the Peloponnesian War between Athens and Sparta started in 431 BCE. Guess we better see how that turned out. In 418 BCE, another battle occurred that was almost a mirror image of the conflict from almost 40 years prior. The Battle of Mantinea came about when Argos, an Athenian, decided to lead a force to push back against the Spartan dominance of the region and move directly against the forces of the Spartan king, King Argus. I'm going to say those very carefully.
Argus and Argos.
This battle would see some 17,000 soldiers face off. A tactical blunder by the Spartans left a flank of their army vulnerable to attack, and Argos made a blunder of his own by pursuing the fleeing forces. This gave King Argus the opportunity to envelop the attacking forces with spearmen to weaken the Athenian forces. He even left troops in the rear to intercept the fleeing Athenians, leading to a decisive Spartan victory. So game over, I guess. Wait, what do you mean this was only about the halfway point of the Peloponnesian War?
What do you mean, Trev?
Well, look, the Peloponnesian War ended in 404 BCE, with Athens pretty much surrendering to the besieging Spartans after being ravaged by disease. It almost seems anticlimactic until you find out that just 1 year later, in 403 BCE, the then Spartan king Pausanias was forced to call upon the troops again due to rising resistance amongst the democratic Athenians to the Spartan oligarchy. 7,500 Spartans faced off against 3,000 Athenian spearmen near the swampland of Halle Marsh. Given the narrow stretch of land and the fact that the Athenians were using the terrain to their advantage, the rebels put up a solid defence until the larger Spartan army forced them to retreat. King Pausanias, however, did not chase down the fleeing soldiers and ultimately agreed to withdraw his troops from the region. However, he did not admit defeat, and no formal declaration of peace was made. So how did this long-term conflict finally come to an end? The leaders of Athens and Sparta did eventually come together to formally declare peace, but you may be surprised at just how long it took. So it was that these two came together on ancient Spartan land to finally, officially bring peace. By this time, however, the leaders were not referred to as kings. Instead, they had the honorific title of mayor. A spokesman for the Athenians, Basilius Telemachus, made the announcement, quote, "This year marks the 25th century since the end of the Peloponnesian War, and this symbolic peace pact is our way of commemorating its end." End quote. Yeah, you heard that right. 25 centuries passed before the following declaration was made. Quote, "Today, 10th of March 1996, in the capital of Laconia, the mayor of Athens and the mayor of Sparta expressed their deep sorrow for the conflict between the two most important cities of ancient Greece, and proclaim a closure of hostilities of the war between Athens and the states of the Peloponnese, inextricably consolidating the bonds of friendship, collaboration, and legitimacy that have flourished since ancient times." End quote. As an awesome little side note, I actually researched and typed this up on the 10th of March 2019. I admit it's entirely coincidental, but I can't help but feel that researching the finalisation of peace 25 centuries in the making, on the 23rd anniversary of its signing, has brought me a little closer to this piece of What the History.
Oh, what a beautiful story. Oh, eventually.
Eventually.
Beautiful story.
Yes.
Oh, that's gorgeous. Yay!
25 centuries with no official peace. That's just...
That's the longest grudge in history.
I think so.
Oh, my God. See, when I was researching and studying ancient Greece in high school, I had no idea that they hadn't formally declared peace. I thought they was just like, oh, yeah, pack up our stuff and go home. So, yeah, so I was...
But I didn't throw it in here, and then certainly if you want to look up more information, there was like a temporary peace that was signed between the two city-states.
When?
Back in the old days.
The old days before BCE, or
yeah, back in the 400s BCE. Yes. But yeah, that one didn't really last. I didn't think there was too much of a point throwing that one in the story. But there you go. And yeah, if you do want to do more research, we have all our links to all our references down in the podcast description down below for you to read more about these awesomely bizarre bits of history that we dig up.
That's right. And you can even find all the newspaper articles of the man bats. etc. that were allegedly found on the moon, but not found on the moon, because the moon in itself will not be able to sustain such life.
No.
Oh gosh, it was a good one though.
I know, I love that
story. I love yours.
I love both these stories. These are great. But if you would like to hear more of our history podcast, it's very, very easy to listen to our backlog. You can head to our homepage, wthpod.rufusproject.com, where you'll find the full backlog and all the episode descriptions with all the links to all our references. You can find the full backlog on Stitcher, on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, or basically any podcast
player everywhere
you prefer to listen to podcasts on. So we certainly encourage you to find us, subscribe, yes. And I'll throw in the rate and review that I don't normally throw in, but, you know, all the podcasts.
Go on.
All the podcast people say rate and review us so that more people can find us.
That's right. Indeed. Please. Please, we need love.
We do indeed. And if you would like to get in touch with us and express your love to us, or maybe talk about other bizarre bits of history that you have heard about, or even, because we have a little project just starting on the simmer at the moment, where we're after random topics. The more random, the better. We just want as many topics as we can get our hands on for something that we'll find about in the future. So that's all good there. So you can get in touch with us by heading to our homepage, wthpod.rufusproject.com, where you can leave a comment below this very episode. You can find What the History on Facebook. We're at pod_what on Twitter. Or you can send us an email to wthpod@rufusproject.com, or even find the enhanced version of this podcast exclusively on Rufus Project TV, which is at tv.rufusproject.com. Which is another place for you to leave comments and messages and all that sort of fun stuff. Whew! Well, speaking of the Rufus Project, we better wish a happy 5th birthday to the Rufus Project podcast.
Happy birthday, guys!
So that can be found at rufusproject.com, and that's where I and my good friend, who was dubbed the ambassador of cult movies by Mr. John Waters himself.
Rock on, John.
Christian Fletcher. We talk about movies with less than stellar performance, reputation, or reviews.
Otherwise known as crap.
And see if we can redeem them.
Or not so crap.
It's a very, very fun podcast, so definitely check that one out. The last one that we did on Electric Boogaloo, I kind of did a rap at the end, so that's something which you may or may not want to hear. I'll let you decide that for yourself.
That was great.
Okay, cool. And probably the other announcement just to make, as you may have noticed from our waffle at the start, this is being recorded a bit late and we'll be going out a bit late. Yes, so one of those situations at the moment, there's not a lot of spare time, unfortunately, so both What the History and the Rufus Project will be taking just a little hiatus, just a little bit of breathing space, so we can get a few things sorted out, and hopefully I can get a couple more ideas and plans for the podcasts, at least off the ground, and get a few things in motion that I've been wanting to do for quite some time. So,
it won't be a long hiatus, absolutely. But we need to have a little bit of time.
Yeah, so don't be sad, but we're going to come back. We're going to come back stronger and well, just as good.
Yeah, and I'll bring the man bats with me.
I've got to find like a little man bat thing now. That can be one of our little join Felix the Kakapo and Raph the Cat.
Raph the Cat.
As the What the History.
He's a mascot.
Things.
How could you go past a 4-foot-tall man bat? I mean, come on.
Absolutely.
Especially around Halloween.
Ooh. And on that note, I think it's time to wrap things up.
I just want to say one more thing. We do love you guys, and we love your support. So keep showing us that love, and we'll keep bringing it.
And there may be new ways to show that love in the not-too-distant future.
Nicely.
Nicely.
Nice showing of love.
Yes. Stay tuned. Keep an eye on the Rufus Project and the What History Podcast on social media for the, I suppose, the quickest and earliest updates.
Yay!
Yay. So.
Thank you, guys.
We will be back in so much time.
Yeah, it won't be long.
It's
just time that we need.
Yes, absolutely. And when we do come back, though, we will certainly be coming back with two more bizarre bits of history to make you say,
What the history? Enjoy those nommies.
And farewell. On the moon.